stressful, to say the least.
That sounds like an excuse to me. I've regularly heard from Nick and Sam, and they're as caught up in that business as you are, if not more so.
They're avoiding it. That's not an option for the staff.
He squeezed her hand, heartened by the fact that she didn't push him away. I thought we had a good time that night.
We did.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw her face light up with embarrassment. God, he loved that she couldn't hide a single thing from him because her face gave her away every time. He'd spent an inordinate amount of time thinking about her and hoping he'd hear from her while resisting the urge to pursue her relentlessly. After one fantastic night with her, he already knew that strategy would backfire on him.
So why didn't I hear from you?
And don't say it's because of work. No one, not even you, works 24 hours a day.
I was embarrassed.
Of course, he knew that already, but he loved hearing her admit it.
Why?
He knew that too, but he wanted her to say it.
Because you're their good friend, and I
jumped into bed with me on our first date. She jerked her hand out of his grasp and covered her ears.
Stop it.
Harry laughed. How could he not? She was simply adorable. He'd thought so from the first time he ever laid eyes on her in the conservative suit with the pearls and the heels that did wondrous things for her legs. So neat and proper. Such a lady. Except in bed. There, he'd seen a whole other side to the delightful Lilia von Nostrand. Even her name was sexy and classy as hell.
It's not funny. You're one of their best friends, and I...
had fantastic monkey sex with me?
I hate you right now.
No, you don't. And that's the problem.
Who said there's a problem?
I say there is. I thought of you constantly since I last saw you, while waiting and hoping you'd call me. I gave you the space I figured you needed to process what happened. But I'm done giving you space. I want you. You want me. And we're far too old to be playing teenager games.
I work for your friend, she said, sounding desperate.
Who just pushed you into my car. She wants us together. The only question that remains is why don't you want us together?
I never said I didn't.
Your silence spoke volumes, sweetheart. He pulled up to the building in the DuPont Circle neighborhood where she lived, and where the aforementioned monkey sex had taken place, put the car in park and shut it off, turning to her.
What's the problem?
She stared down at her lap, where her hands were tightly folded, probably the way the nuns had taught her. She gave off a Catholic schoolgirl vibe that he found wildly attractive.
Lilia, look at me.
She shook her head. Taking her by the chin, he compelled her to look at him, and was stunned to see her big brown eyes awash in unshed tears.
Talk to me. I want to understand what's going on.
I don't do things like what I did with you.
Have sex?
She closed her eyes, which forced a couple of tears to slide down her cheeks. He brushed them away with his thumbs, and then took full advantage of her closed eyes to kiss her softly. Her eyes popped open.
Don't.
Why not? He asked, doing it again.
Because.
Because why?
Was it his imagination, or was she leaning into his kisses? No, definitely not his imagination.
Tell me what it is you don't do.
Sex on the first date with my boss's friend.
She flushed again, and he kissed the rosy blush on her cheeks.
Your boss approves. And as for sex on the first date, it happens. It doesn't make you any less of a good girl.
Yes, it does. That wasn't just sex. That was...
phenomenal, life-changing, must do it again soon or die from wanting to sex?
She sighed deeply, her body losing some of its rigidity. He kissed her again, this time using his tongue to coax his way into her mouth, satisfaction and desire flooding him when she responded with strokes of her tongue against his.
Invite me in, he whispered against her lips. She groaned, and he went hard as stone. Please invite me in.
Harry, I can't.
He turned his attention to her elegant neck. And yes, necks could be elegant. Just take hers, for example. And those pearls just did it for him.
Yes, you really can. I promise you won't go to hell.
Don't make fun of me.
I'm not. I swear to God I'm not.
Yes, you are, so you shouldn't swear to God.
Adorable. So, so adorable. And mine.
He'd never had such a thought about a woman in his life.
Invite me in.
She tipped her head to give him better access to her neck, so he used his lips, tongue, and teeth to close the deal.
You can't park here,
she said a minute later, when her body trembled with the same desire that gripped him.
Show me where.
She pointed to a garage, gave him the code to get in, and directed him to a visitor spot. He got out of the car and went around to collect her before she could change her mind, taking comfort in the way she gripped his hand as she led the way to the elevator. On the way up to her apartment, he pushed her into a corner and kissed her again with a week's worth of pent-up desire. Thoughts of her, of their one night, had driven him mad as he'd tried to wait her out. He'd never been so happy to see anyone than he was to see her at Nick's tonight. And he had a feeling Sam had set up the whole thing. He'd have to remember to thank her when he got the chance. Lilia's arms curled around his neck as she kissed him back, with the kind of heat that had kept him awake at night, recalling the pleasure he'd found with her, and wondering if it was going to be a one-time thing, or the start of something more. This, right here, this could be significant. The dinging of the elevator arriving at her floor had him pulling back from her, while staring down at her big eyes and swollen lips. He shook his head to clear the cobwebs, took her hand, and towed her along with him from the elevator to her door. She fumbled with her purse and keys, and took far too long to get the door open and walk inside. He closed it and went to relieve her of the heavy briefcase and matching purse that he placed on the floor in the foyer. It had come as no surprise to him the last time he was here that her apartment was right out of a Ralph Lauren photo shoot, with everything exactly where it belonged and nothing that might smack of clutter anywhere to be found. But he could care less about her apartment or her ruthless organizational skills. No, he needed a horizontal surface, and he needed it right now. His gaze landed on the kitchen counter. That would do. He removed her suit coat and began unfastening the delicate pearl buttons that held her blouse together. Pushing back the two sides, he unveiled a sexy lace something or other underneath that made him want to howl from lust. He reached around her and released her skirt, pushing it down over her hips until it pooled around her heels, which he left on. Harry took a step back to look his fill at creamy flesh encased in lace, garters holding silk stockings, and the tiniest scrap of fabric pretending to be panties. She was a freaking goddess, and the best part was she had no idea.
Harry, what's wrong?
Abso-fucking-lutely nothing. You're so indecently beautiful. Her arms folded across her chest.
I am not indecent.
Leave it to her to focus on that one word. Gently taking hold of her arms, he drew them down to her sides and bent his head to kiss the plump tops of her breasts.
I meant that as the highest of compliments.
He left everything on except the panties, which he removed before backing her up to the kitchen counter.
Harry?
He was very busy kissing her gorgeous neck as he released his belt and the fasteners on his suit pants.
What are you doing?
This. They'd had the safe sex talk the last time and had concluded that condoms weren't needed. He lifted her and brought her down on his hard cock. She gasped from the impact, the tight fit, the heat they created together. Her fingers gripped his hair and shoulder. He had an ass cheek in each hand as he lifted her up and down, driving into her hard and fast. needing to slake the insane desire that had been eating him up for weeks. Depositing her on the countertop, he leaned over her and captured her mouth in a deep, desperate kiss as he reached down to where they were joined to help her along. She broke the kiss and cried out, her inner muscles clamping down on his cock and finishing him off long before he was ready. That was what she did to him. She made him crazy and hungry and needy for more of her. She was still coming when he kissed her, continuing to stroke into her even after they both had come. Wrapping his arms around her, he lifted her off the counter, kicked off his pants, and carried her to the bedroom, where round two happened at a much more leisurely but no less satisfying pace. Afterward, he held her as his heart rate and breathing slowly returned to normal. "I'm not going to let you run away from me again. This is happening."
"What is it exactly that's happening? So far, all it's been is a couple of drinks and some sex."
"Don't you mean amazing, life-changing sex?"
She poked his side and made him laugh. "Answer the question."
"It's going to be much more than that. It already is. At least for me. I thought I'd go crazy hoping you would call me."
"You could have called me."
"Would you have taken a call from me?" Her silence spoke volumes. "Will you take my call now?" After another long silence, she said,
"Yes, Harry. I'll take your call."
Chapter 28.
Things happen fast when you're the Vice President of the United States and request a private meeting with the embattled President and his wife. Sam hated having to go to the White House with her face looking the way it did. But with Nick under tremendous pressure to testify in the congressional hearings, they had to do it before the President ceded to calls for his resignation. The meeting took place in the residence, which Sam had not seen before. Per Nick's request, it was only the four of them sitting in a parlor with a coffee service and tray of Danish on the table between them. Sam had worn her sleekest light gray suit, a pink silk blouse, and the Louis Vuittons Nick had bought her for Christmas last year, as well as the diamond key necklace he'd given her as a wedding gift, and her diamond engagement ring that she only wore on special occasions. A private meeting with the President and First Lady in the White House residence counted as a special occasion in her world. She had brought clothes to change into before she went to work.
"My goodness!"
Gloria Nelson zeroed right in on the massacre on Sam's face.
"What happened?"
Overnight, the bruise had turned an angry purple color, and her eye was completely swollen shut. She hoped her one working eye would be enough to gauge whether the Nelsons were telling the truth. "A scuffle with someone who didn't think he needed to be arrested," Sam said, choosing fiction over fact. Her troubles with colleagues had been in the news often enough. She hoped to keep this latest incident under wraps.
"I so admire what you do."
Gloria poured coffee for each of them. She wore a tan suit and looked as if she'd just stepped out of a beauty salon, while Sam looked like the Bride of Frankenstein.
"Especially with what's been happening in the city lately. Are you any closer to an arrest in the shootings?"
"We're closing in," Sam said, keeping it brief. They weren't there to talk about the case she needed to get back to.
"Thank you for meeting with us on short notice," Nick said. "It was the least we could do under the circumstances," David Nelson said.
"We want you to know," Gloria said, her voice quivering with emotion, "how sorry we are for what our son put you through. We're appalled by the entire thing."
"If you've come to ask me to resign," the President said, "I'll do it. I have no desire to put the country through a protracted scandal that'll probably end badly for me anyway." "We haven't come to ask you to resign," Nick said. "We'd like to hear directly from you that you knew nothing about what your son was up to."
"We didn't," Nelson said, looking Nick in the eye. "I swear on the lives of our grandchildren, we did not know."
"Christopher has been a difficult child from the beginning," Gloria said haltingly. "We have five children, and we love them all, but he didn't make it easy. He was in and out of trouble,
involved with drugs and kicked out of 4 schools. His brothers and sisters were high achievers, excellent students and athletes, college graduates. He managed to graduate from law school, but just barely. And there were hushed allegations of cheating in school, and that he paid someone to take the bar exam for him. We've long believed that the so-called think tank he oversees is a front for illegal activity, but we could never prove it. Until he was arrested and we found out what he'd been doing. A tear rolled down her cheek, and she brushed it away as if it infuriated her. We're horrified by what he did. The threats against innocent children, the murder of Sam's ex-husband, the things he got Nick's mother to say. The president took her hand and sent her a loving look.
We did everything we could to get him the help he needed, David said. He's been to rehab so many times I've lost count. He's gone through at least 20 psychiatrists and been on a variety of medications that either made things worse or turned him into a zombie.
He swallowed hard. Despite all that, never in a million years did we think he was capable of the things he's done. If we'd had any idea. His voice broke. We would have intervened if we'd known, Gloria said emphatically. Sam glanced at Nick and saw that he was visibly moved by the Nelson story.
I have one question, Sam said.
We'll answer any questions you have, David said.
How did you keep his troubles private in the age of the 24-hour news cycle?
I was a senator with a bright political future and 4 other children to think about. I buried it.
His blunt words gave Sam new respect. While she didn't agree with what he'd done, as a parent herself, she understood why. People went to extraordinary lengths to protect their children.
Do you have other questions? Nick asked Sam.
She shook her head. I've heard what I need to, and I feel better knowing you both had no knowledge of what your son was doing. That was the signal she'd worked out with Nick in advance, so he'd know she believed them.
Sam and I are going to issue a statement, letting the public and the Congress know that we've met with you and we believe you when you say you had no knowledge of your son's schemes.
David stared at him, appearing shocked.
Why would you do that? Frankly, because I don't wish to become president. Not now and not like this. However, there is something I do want. Name it. A seat at your table and a role in your administration beyond boosting your sagging approval ratings.
Nelson had the good sense to look chagrined by the assertion that he'd sidelined his more popular vice president.
We can make that happen effective immediately.
Excellent. We'll issue a statement today that'll hopefully put an end to this madness so we can get back to doing the people's business.
I don't know what to say, Nelson said.
Say thank you, dear, Gloria said.
Nelson stood and offered his hand to Nick.
You have my profound thanks, and any role in my administration you wish to take on going forward.
Nick rose to shake the president's hand.
I'll give that some thought and get back to you. I'll look forward to hearing from you.
Sam shook their hands and then preceded Nick to the door. He took her hand and they walked silently through the hallways of the White House, with Brant following close behind them, until they reached Nick's office. Once inside with the door closed, he turned to her.
I'm glad you believed them, because I did too. Their ordeal didn't begin with Christopher's latest crimes, Sam said.
As a parent, I feel for them.
How can a family have 4 great kids and 1 bad apple?
I don't know, but hearing what they went through with him makes me thankful for our fantastic kid.
He put his arms around her and kissed the uninjured side of her face. Me too. Will you still love me if I'm only going to be the vice president for the time being?
I love you more for being only the vice president. Thank God that monkey is off our backs.
It's not yet, but it will be soon. And then the only monkey we'll have left is the monkey sex.
Sam laughed, and he kissed her gently, careful not to touch the side of her mouth that hurt. She wished she had time to burrow into him and breathe in the endlessly appealing scent of home. I need to get to work.
They'd already put together the joint statement they would release now that they were confident about the president's lack of culpability in his son's crimes. The gist of the statement, which they planned to give to Darren Tabor exclusively, was that the Capuanos had met with the Nelsons, and the vice president and second lady believe the president and first lady when they say they had nothing to do with their son's crimes. They hope the president and Congress can get back to the important work on behalf of the American people. Let me give you a lift. He summoned Brandt and asked him to prepare to leave to get Sam to work. It'd be less complicated if you put me in a cab.
Maybe so, but I couldn't go with you for the ride.
This way, I can. I do like the way you think, Mr. Vice President.
I like the way you do everything.
Avery scored a lunchtime appointment with Rosemary. After Shelby agreed to come with him, he'd wanted to get it done as soon as possible so they could hopefully get back on track. He already felt better after talking to her the night before. At least the problem was out in the open now, rather than festering like a wound that couldn't be healed no matter how hard he tried. As he drove them, Shelby texted with her sister, who was staying with Noah while they were gone. It was the first time she'd left the baby, and she'd been a hot mess about it. He hoped that wouldn't derail the purpose of this outing.
He's fine, honey. Your sister is a professional mom.
Nancy had three teenagers.
You called in an expert.
I know.
Shelby.
She glanced over at him.
What?
Stop texting her. She knows what to do, and she'll call if she needs you.
Let me just send this last one so she knows where the extra bottles are.
You left her with a week's worth of breast milk. She won't need extra bottles before we get back.
Are you making fun of me? She asked,
her tone tinged with amusement.
Would I do that?
Yes, I believe you would.
Darling, that'd just be mean.
Don't unleash that accent on me. You know what it does to me.
The tiny taste of normal made him hungry for more. Taking a chance, he reached for her hand, knocking the phone into her purse in the process.
Smooth.
I try.
He held on to her hand until he had to release it to parallel park.
If I get out and come around to get you, will you check your phone while I'm outside?
Of course not. Why would I do that?
Avery laughed.
Why indeed? Wait for me.
He stepped out into thick, swampy heat. People who didn't believe in climate change needed to spend some time in the district in the summer. It seemed to get hotter every year. Opening the passenger door, he held out a hand for Shelby and helped her out. She'd worn a cute pink dress with white polka dots and sky-high pink heels and had obviously spent time on her hair and makeup. On the sly, Avery had asked her sister if they had time for lunch after their appointment, and she'd encouraged him to stay out as long as they wanted. He planned to break the lunch news to Shelby after their appointment. Since they had a minute, he rested his hands on her hips and looked down at her. He'd never thought much of the color pink until she'd come into his life with her obsession for it. Now pink reminded him of her, and he loved it.
In case I forgot to say so earlier, you look gorgeous today.
You look gorgeous all the time. It's really not fair.
Shut up, he said,
smiling as he kissed her.
It's true. No woman should have to live with a man who looks as good as you do from the minute you wake up.
Raising a brow, he said,
Are you saying you don't want to live with me anymore?
Not at all. I'm merely pointing out your unfair advantage.
If you could see yourself through my eyes, you'd know you have nothing to feel disadvantaged about. In my opinion, you have all the advantages.
And that, the accent, the words, the gorgeous golden eyes, the cheekbones.
She sighed dramatically.
Not fair.
For the first time since he'd ruined everything, he felt hopeful that they might be able to put their relationship back together. Taking her hand, he led her to the door to Rosemary's office.
This is where I come to have my soul scrubbed in battery acid.
Shelby laughed at his description of the therapy.
I'm looking forward to meeting this woman you spend so much time with.
You'll like her.
Rosemary's door was propped open,
so Avery knocked. He suspected she'd added this hour to her schedule to accommodate them more quickly, and he appreciated that.
"Come in," she said cheerfully.
After spending her days listening to other people's problems, he marveled at her cheerfulness. He'd be ready to murder someone. With his hand on the small of Shelby's back, Avery ushered her in ahead of him.
"Hi there." Rosemary extended a hand to Shelby. "You must be Shelby. I've heard so much about you."
"Likewise."
"I'm sure Avery has plenty to say about me," Rosemary said drolly. "He loves every minute he spends with me."
The comment made them laugh and eased his tension.
"You know it," he said.
"I'm so glad you could come in," Rosemary said to Shelby. He could tell that the therapist's friendliness had put Shelby at ease.
"Thanks for accommodating us on short notice."
"No problem at all. I understand you're madly in love with your little Noah."
"Oh, he's just the best. I waited forever to be a mom, and he's made the wait well worth it."
"Congratulations. Enjoy every minute. He'll grow up so fast."
"That's what everyone says."
"Well, we all know why we're here, and I want to make sure we get the most out of our hour together, so I'll cut to the chase. Avery has told me about his mistake and the terrible hurt it has caused, and the ensuing rift between the two of you."
"Wow," Shelby said, glancing at him.
"She doesn't mince words."
"No, she doesn't."
Rosemary smiled.
"I want to help. What can I do to help you move past this, Shelby?"
I've been trying to put it behind me. Avery, he's so wonderful with Noah. He loves him so much, which is such a special gift to me. And to Noah. I'd expected to raise him on my own. When Avery came into my life and said he didn't care how the baby was conceived, he said he'd love him no matter where he came from. That's when I fell in love with him."
For the first time since that awful day, she took his hand and held on tight to him. His heart contracted with what felt an awful lot like joy. The accompanying swell of emotion had him fearful that he might break down. Later, you found out he'd had complicated feelings for your friend and employer. Shelby nodded, the inner light that was so much a part of her dimming.
"It hurt me that everyone kept that from me for so long. I felt stupid because I had no idea."
"Do you believe Avery when he tells you nothing of any consequence ever happened between the two of them, because she was happily married when he met her?"
"I know all the parties involved, and I absolutely believe that nothing happened. Sam would never be unfaithful to Nick. They're crazy about each other and don't care who knows it."
"They do give off that vibe," Rosemary agreed. "I'm glad to know it's authentic."
"It's so authentic."
"Do you understand that this information was kept from you by three people you care about because they care about you and didn't want to hurt you with information they felt was irrelevant to your relationship with Avery and with them?"
"It took me some time to understand that, but I do now."
"We were well past that when I made the huge mistake of saying her name at the worst possible time," Avery said, grimacing all over again at the thought of that moment. It still made him sick to think about how much pain he'd caused the woman he loved.
"Avery and I have talked a lot about that event," Rosemary said. "We've rehashed it from every possible angle, and I've tried to help him see that sometimes our brain behaves in ways that make no sense. For instance, did you know that Sam reminds him of a woman he loved when he was in college?" Stunned, Shelby looked at him.
"No, I didn't know that. You've never told me."
"I never told anyone until Rosemary got it out of me."
"Who was she?" Shelby asked.
God, this hurt, even after all this time.
"Her name was Jennifer. We met at a dance when I was at the Citadel. She went to a local high school in Charleston. I was crazy about her from the minute I met her, and she felt the same way. Every time I saw her, my feelings for her multiplied, until she was the most important part of my life. You haven't lived until you've tried to have a girlfriend while attending a military college. Over time, she got tired of waiting for me to be free to see her, and she moved on with someone who had time for her. When we broke up,
That was the closest I ever came to leaving school. My parents got involved with the school counselor, and they got me through it. But it was the first real crisis I ever had.
And Sam reminds you of her?
I'd never made the connection until Rosemary connected the dots for me. But Sam does bear a striking resemblance to Jennifer. I never realized it because I worked so hard to bury all thoughts of Jennifer that I didn't make the connection. But once Rosemary did, a lot of things made sense to me.
Wow, Shelby said. That's...
It's crazy, darling. I know it is. I've always known this thing I had for Sam was ridiculous, but it was like I couldn't control it even when I knew I had to. Rosemary thinks that was driven by the unfinished business I had with Jennifer more than anything directly to do with Sam.
I like that theory a whole lot better than you having a secret burning love for my friend and boss.
I do too.
Do you know whatever became of Jennifer?
I don't, and I don't want to know. I have no interest in anyone but the woman who's going to be my wife, if she'll still have me after the mistakes I've made. A few weeks ago, it would have been impossible for him to say something so intimate in front of Rosemary, but she no longer felt like a stranger. She'd helped him to make sense of a lot of crap, and he was grateful to her for that. He hadn't thought about Jennifer or the devastation he'd experienced when their relationship ended in years. Rosemary had asked him to describe her, and after he did, she'd said, "You could have been describing our second lady." That had been the ultimate lightning rod moment for him. "Shelby," Rosemary said after a long silence, "how do you feel about what Avery said?"
I want the same thing he does. I want to be married to him. I want him to formally adopt Noah. I want us to raise him together, and maybe, if we're super lucky, we'll have another baby that belongs to both of us from the beginning.
That was the first time he'd heard her say she wanted him to adopt Noah. His heart ached with love for her.
"Noah has belonged to both of us from the beginning," he said, "and I'd love nothing more than to formally adopt him."
He put his arm around her and kissed her temple, fairly shaking from the relief of hearing her say she still wanted the same things he did. "You've made great progress today, but if you're amenable, I'd like to continue to see you both to make sure we've laid a strong foundation for your life together."
"That's fine with me."
Avery would always be thankful to Rosemary for helping him put his life back together.
"Me too," Shelby said. "Whatever it takes."
They left a few minutes later and went down the stairs holding hands. Outside, Avery said,
"Go ahead and check your phone. I know you're dying to."
"Only a little."
She pulled the pink bedazzled monstrosity from her pink purse, her face lighting up with joy.
"Look."
Nancy had sent a selfie of herself with a sleeping Noah in her arms.
"Has he grown since we left? Tell me the truth."
"I'll tell you the truth, darling. You're losing it."
"What a way to go,"
she said with a happy sigh, as she gazed at the baby like she hadn't seen him in a year.
"I asked Nancy if we could go to lunch after our appointment, and she said to take our time. Do you think you could relax enough to enjoy a meal with your fiancé?"
Shelby bit her lip.
"I could, but there's something else I'd much rather do."
"Name it."
She dropped the phone into her purse, took a step closer to him, and put her arms around his waist, looking up at him with the big, expressive eyes that had looked at him with such adoration until it had gone so very wrong. For the first time since that dreadful day, she looked at him the way she used to. He wanted to drop to his knees and give thanks to whatever higher power had made it possible for her to forgive him.
"I want to go home and be alone with my sexy fiancé."
She punctuated her words with kisses to his neck and jaw.
"If he can take the afternoon off, that is."
Avery turned his head ever so slightly, just enough to bring his lips into contact with hers.
"Your fiancé can think of nothing else in this world he'd rather do than take an afternoon off to spend with you."
Chapter 29.
Well-rested and equipped with the knowledge that their lives weren't about to become more complicated anytime soon, Sam returned to work, ready to close the case that had been such a vexing source of frustration. Upon arriving, she met with the missing persons detective leading the search for Captain Wallach.
"What have you got for me, detective?"
"We're zeroing in on the stepson from his first marriage." Detective Jacqueline DeMeo had gorgeous long dark hair and sharp blue eyes. Sam hadn't worked with her before, but had heard about her because she was good at her job. "Curtis Moore. He was an infant when his mother married Wallach. He's been in and out of trouble for close to a decade. Wallach washed his hands of the kid after he and the mother split. Word is they split because of the kid."
"Where's Curtis now?"
"No known address. We're looking for him, but I wanted you to be aware of where we are."
"You have a picture of him?"
"Nope. His files were sealed for some reason." "Could that reason be a favor his stepfather did for the kid's mother?" "That's one possibility we're looking into."
"Keep me posted?"
"Absolutely. I heard about the funeral home plan. That's brilliant."
"Thank you.
I have my moments." "From what I hear, you have more than a few moments. Have a good day, Lieutenant."
"You do the same."
Sam spent the rest of the afternoon hunkered down with her team, making their plan for the funeral home tour. Angel had been released from the hospital and was resting at home until they picked her up at 6 to prepare her for what they needed her to do. Roberto had been understandably hesitant to allow his Angel to be exposed to the men who'd hurt her, but she'd prevailed, saying she wanted to do whatever she could to get them. Sam had always admired her protectiveness of Roberto, but now she admired Angel's strength and determination, too. She went with Freddie and Gonzo to pick up Angel at the home she shared with Roberto. Everyone had agreed that Sam should be part of the preparation, but Green would be the one to escort her into the funeral homes. He and Angel would be wearing wires so they could be monitored from the van that would transport them. Sam would be in the van with Freddie and Gonzo. Green would escort Angel, with Jeannie following them through the line for additional backup, and they'd have tactical response teams on standby to help apprehend the suspects if Angel spotted them. Angel had made an effort with her hair and makeup that went a long way toward hiding the bruises and abrasions on her face, but she moved slowly, grimacing in pain on occasion.
"It's too soon for her to be doing this," Roberto said to Sam. "She just got out of the hospital."
"If we're going to grab them at a wake, it needs to be now," Sam told him. "I promise my team will take very good care of her and bring her back to you in a couple of hours."
"She acts tough, but she's broken. They broke her."
"She's too tough to be broken. She'll bounce back. It'll take some time and patience and all the love you can give her. But she's going to be okay. Someone who was broken wouldn't be capable of what she's doing tonight."
"You bring her back to me, Sam. I'm trusting you with the most important person in my life. You ain't never let me down before. Please don't start now."
"I won't. I promise." Sam planned to make sure she kept that promise by surrounding Angel with security every step of the way. Green walked Angel through 2 wakes, expressing condolences to grieving family members, before emerging into the heavy humidity, shaking his head. They got back in the van and moved on to the 3rd one, the group more subdued after 2 strikeouts. "This next one is one of ours," he said, referring to the Green Lawn Funeral Home on Georgia Avenue Northwest. "I've known the funeral director for years and gave him a heads up that we'd be by."
"And he knows not to acknowledge you?" Sam asked.
"Yes, I talked to him."
"Why the hell is there so much freaking traffic at this hour?" she asked.
"The feds are in town," Gonzo said.
"Whose idea was it to have a baseball team in this notoriously congested city?" Sam asked.
"Don't let Scotty hear you saying that,"
Freddie said.
"How are you holding up?" Sam asked Angel.
"I'm okay."
"Are you hurting?"
"A little, but I can handle it. I don't want to stop until we find them."
Sam gave her arm a gentle squeeze and nodded.
"You let me know if you need to go home."
They knew it was possible they might not get this finished tonight. There were other wakes they could check tomorrow. But she hoped for Angel's sake and the sakes of the other victims' families that they could finish this up tonight. Gonzo, who was driving,
brought the van to a stop in the parking lot.
"Here we go again," Green said to Angel. "Are you ready?"
"I'm ready. Let's go."
Green got out first and helped Angel. She moved slowly and carefully, making Sam feel terrible for putting her through this so soon after her first ordeal.
"She's a trooper," Freddy said.
"She is indeed. If she spots these guys, we'll have her to thank for closing this one."
"And you," he said. "It was your idea to do this."
"She gets the credit." After that, they were quiet, listening to the feed coming from the wires.
"Take your time," Green said in a low, soothing tone.
They'd agreed ahead of time that he would keep an arm around her, in case she needed the support, and to better sell their cover as a grieving couple. Sam listened intently, sitting on the edge of her seat, waiting to hear something. Anything that might indicate that Angel had seen someone she recognized. After a long period of quiet, a sharp gasp echoed through the interior of the van.
"She's got something."
Sam keyed the radio to convey the news that Angel had seen someone she might recognize to the tactical response team that was standing by, waiting for the word to go in. She waited breathlessly for the single word from Green that would trigger the next stage of their operation. Seconds and minutes passed in agonizing silence. Sam listened so hard she began to hear things that weren't there. A full 5 minutes after the gasp, Sam heard the word she'd been waiting for from Green.
"Go.
Move in," she said into the radio. Everything happened fast after that. Officers swarmed the funeral home from all sides. Sam, Freddy, and Gonzo followed them inside, where two men dressed in black suits with Green Lawn name badges on their lapels ushered stunned guests out of the building. In one of the rooms, Sam saw Green directing the teams, while Jeannie had an arm around Angel as she walked her toward the door. Sam reached for her and wrapped her arms around the sobbing young woman.
"You did good," she said,
stroking Angel's hair and back while making eye contact with Jeannie.
"Let's get you out of here."
She had no sooner said the words when a shot rang out behind them. Sam held on tight to Angel and ran for the door, determined to get her to safety. Angel stumbled and nearly fell, and only Sam's tight hold kept her standing and moving forward. Jeannie followed, and between the two of them, they got Angel into the van and out of harm's way.
"Stay with her," Sam said to Jeannie.
"Yes, ma'am."
With Angel in good hands, Sam ran back into the funeral home, where Gonzo and Freddy had two young men on the floor, their knees pressed to their backs as they cuffed them and advised them of their rights.
"This is outrageous," another man said. "You can't come into my sister's wake and arrest my nephew."
"Looks like we just did."
Sam tried not to look at the woman laid out in the coffin at the front of the room. It was a wonder she wasn't rolling in her coffin from the goings-on at her wake. The powerful smell of too many lilies in one room made Sam feel a little sick.
"I'll have your badge."
"Okay."
He lunged at her, and Cameron Green intervened. Before the man knew what hit him, he too had been cuffed and was on his way to be processed at HQ.
"You're going to pay for this,"
he screamed as he was hauled away. Gonzo and Freddy followed with the two young men they'd been looking for. They walked with their heads down as they were escorted from the building and placed in squad cars for the ride to HQ.
"Good job, detective," Sam said to Green.
"Thank you."
"Who fired the shot?"
"One of the perps pulled a gun and got off a wild shot."
He pointed to the ceiling where the plaster had been shattered by the impact. "We neutralized him before he could get off another."
"What do you want to bet that the bullet in the ceiling is going to match the ones from the shootings?" Sam asked him.
"I'd bet the farm."
Chapter 30. Leaving the funeral home in the hands of the crime scene detectives to process, with orders to get the bullet from the ceiling to the lab ASAP, Sam and her team took Angel home, delivering her to a relieved Roberto. He was waiting outside for them after Angel texted to tell him she was on the way. Sam leaned in for the hug he offered.
"Thank you."
"Thank you for letting me borrow your Angel. She did a good thing tonight," In fact, I think she'd make an excellent cop.
Don't even say it, he growled.
I gotta go process the scumbags, but I'll be back in touch soon, okay?
Thank you, Angel said. For everything.
Thank you. We might never have gotten them if it hadn't been for you.
I want to go to bed.
Come on, baby.
Roberto rolled his chair to follow her into their building.
Let's get you tucked in.
Sam watched them until they were safely inside, and then jumped into the van. First thing when we get to HQ, I want the addresses of the perps. We'll raid their homes and maybe find Wallach. She placed a call to Detective DeMeo from Missing Persons. We're fairly confident we've got our shooters, she said without preamble. I'll have an address for your boy Curtis Moore in the next few minutes, if you'd like to ready your team to search for Wallach.
We're on standby. I'll be back to you shortly.
Thankfully, the traffic had let up, and they were back to HQ a short time later. Go to processing, Sam said to Freddy, as they walked in through the morgue entrance. Get me their addresses.
On it.
I want them kept separate and put into interrogation as soon as they're processed.
You got it.
Sam popped into the morgue, looking for Lindsay. Doc, I need you to take some DNA swabs. I think we've got our murdering, raping scumbags in custody.
Well, hallelujah.
Let me know when they're ready to be swabbed.
20 minutes.
I'll be there. Sam walked to the pit, went into her office, and found the bottle of painkillers she kept in her desk, swallowing two of them, hoping they'd dull the pain in her head and face. After they closed this case from hell, she was taking a few days off. Malone came into the office.
You got him?
We got him. I just need to dot a few I's and cross some T's to make sure it's them. But with Angel's ID, we're at 99% certainty. Lindsay is coming to swab them as soon as they're through processing.
Great work, Lieutenant. As always.
Thank you.
You look like hell.
I feel like hell.
We could take it from here, you know.
Sam rolled her one working eye at him. Like that's gonna happen. You wouldn't want me to miss the best part.
When we get them in a room and let them know they're screwed, glued, and tattooed every which way to next Tuesday, would you?
I'd never deny you that moment. Detective Green did great work on this case. He's going to be an asset to the department.
I had no doubt.
Winking, he added,
he came highly recommended.
Sam laughed. I'm not sure if he still thinks I did him any favors recommending him.
He's thrilled to be working for you. They all are.
Thank you. I'm lucky to have them.
We need to brief the press about the arrests.
I'll take care of that, and notify the families as soon as we know with 100% certainty that we've got our guys. They'd have to wait for DNA to confirm it.
I'll let you get to it.
Sam sent a text to Nick.
We got him. He wrote right back. Oh, thank God.
Gonna be here a while sewing it up.
Take your time and congrats. So proud of you.
Thanks. Love you.
Love you too.
Sam took a moment to sit at her desk, collect her thoughts, and wallow in the relief of knowing they'd gotten the guys who'd ended 6 innocent lives and savagely attacked Angel. Closing her eyes, she released a deep breath and allowed in the euphoria that always overtook her at these moments. It was an incredible high to know that she'd again contributed to making their city a safer place for everyone who called it home, as well as the millions who visited each year. When Freddy knocked on the door, Sam realized she'd dozed off.
We're ready for you, Lieutenant.
He handed her the booking information for both suspects.
They're in interview 1 and 2.
I saw Detective DeMeo and took the liberty of giving her their addresses. I hope that was okay.
That's great, thanks.
Any talk of lawyers?
Not that I heard.
Good. Give me 5 minutes, and then we'll take them one at a time.
Okay.
Sam used her 5 minutes to call Lindsay to come do the swabs, to ask Assistant U.S. Attorney Faith Miller to come observe the interviews, and to review the booking sheets on both men. Curtis Moore, 23, listed an address in Southeast and had a long list of priors, all misdemeanors, ranging from vandalism to simple assault to shoplifting, as well as a sealed juvenile record. The other one, Deacon Holt, was also 23, with no priors. Very interesting. Gee, I wonder who the ringleader was. Operating on a hunch, she decided to start with Holt. If this was his first rodeo, he was apt to be scared shitless, and having him freaked out could be helpful under these circumstances. Sam stepped out of her office. Cruz! He popped up in his cubicle like a target in a whack-a-mole game. You bellowed? Let's go. As they walked to the interrogation rooms, she said, We're starting with Holt. No priors, which means this is his first time visiting our esteemed headquarters. He's apt to piss himself after 5 minutes with you. Let's see if I can get him to pee his pants in 3 minutes. My money is on you, LT. Lindsay joined them, and Sam asked Freddy to wait outside until they had the swab. Inside the room, Lindsay made fast work of explaining what she was doing and retrieving the swab from the inside of Holt's cheek. I'll get this to the lab. Thanks, Doc. Sam nodded to the officer guarding the room, dismissing him, and turned to Holt, who sobbed uncontrollably. I'm going for pee in 2 minutes or less, Sam whispered to Freddy when he came in. He grinned in response to the comment. AUSA Miller is in observation with Captain Malone and Chief Farnsworth. With all the players in place, it was time to get down to business. Mr. Holt, she said sharply, pull yourself together. His hands shook as he wiped the tears off his face and tried to sit up a little straighter. He was so thin and wiry, his bones were visible under his t-shirt. With close-cropped dark hair, light tan skin, and brown eyes rimmed with red from crying, he hardly looked 23. I'm Lieutenant Holland. This is Detective Cruz. We'll be recording this interview. His eyes bugged when he recognized her. He shook uncontrollably. For once, being recognized didn't suck. Freddy pressed record on the device on the table, recited the date, time, the officers present, and the name of the suspect. You want to tell me what the hell you were thinking driving around shooting innocent people in my city? He broke down, sobbing.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean...
You didn't mean to kill 6 people and viciously assault another? He shook his head, and then dropped it onto his arms on the table.
I didn't want to. But Curtis, he said I had to drive or he'd take my sister.
Did he make you rape that girl too? Nodding, he said,
He had a gun on me. He said I had to do it or he'd do the same thing to my sister.
Our victim didn't mention anything about one of you threatening the other.
He told me before we grabbed her. He said I had to do it or else... I love my sister. She's all I got since our ma died. I can't let nobody hurt her. She's only 16.
What was Curtis hoping to gain by killing people?
He wanted revenge because the city fired him.
How'd you get mixed up with him?
We were friends when we were in school. I saw him for the first time in years at a friend's party, and he started hitting me up, acting like we was best friends. Then I saw him looking at my sister, and I didn't like it. I told him to cut it out, and he said he was gonna do a lot more than look if I didn't do exactly what he told me to.
How did his stepfather figure into it? Holt jerked his head up, his eyes wild as the unmistakable scent of urine filled the room, turning her stomach. Under 2 minutes, as predicted, she shot Freddy a victorious smile. He smiled back at her. You're in a shitload of trouble here, Mr. Holt. We're running the DNA we took from the girl you two attacked, as well as hairs and fibers found in the cars you stole. That DNA is going to match the sample Dr. McNamara just took from you, isn't it? Holt nodded as tears continued to roll down his cheeks.
I'm so sorry. I never wanted to do any of it. Curtis, he made me.
You're going to tell us everything. Every single thing from the first second you reconnected with Curtis all the way up to your mother's wake. If you leave out anything, I'll make sure you're charged right along with him. If you fully cooperate and we determine you're another victim here, you won't be charged. Do you understand? He nodded. Sam pushed a tablet of paper and a pen across the table. Start writing. I want names, dates, places, and every detail of what went down. And make it so we can read it. Holt took the pen, wiped his face again, and began writing. 2 hours later, they had the full story laid out before them. Curtis Moore had roped Deacon Holt into his plan to rain terror down upon the city he used to work for, until he'd been fired from his public works job for falsifying his hours. He wanted revenge, and had killed 6 innocent people and assaulted another to get it. "Where's Wallach?" Sam asked.
"I don't know. Curtis, he wouldn't tell me where he was holding him."
To Freddy, Sam said, "Tell DeMeo to focus their efforts on Moore's place."
"Got it."
He left the room to see to her order. "Do you know anything about how he kidnapped his stepfather?"
"He grabbed him after the AA meeting he goes to. He said Kenny made it easy because he was so fucking predictable. Curtis said Kenny left his mom because of him, and she never got over it. So he deserved to go through hell for doing that to Curtis's mom. Kenny broke her heart, he said."
Holt wiped more tears from his face.
"It made Curtis real mad that Kenny loved his new wife so much. He knew that threatening her would get Kenny to do what he said. But he didn't want to do it either. Curtis made him. He had a gun on Kenny the whole time while he made me drive the car. He kept saying, 'If you want to see your precious Leslie again, make the shot. If you miss, I'm going to get her, and I'll make her wish she was dead.' Kenny took the shots Curtis told him to take, and he never missed. But he was a fucking mess afterward every time. That's why we stopped. Kenny was so fucked up, which made Curtis real mad. He beat the shit out of him."
As Sam took notes, she battled nausea at how disgusting this entire thing was.
"What's gonna happen to me?"
Deacon asked in a small voice. "If you continue to cooperate, and Captain Wallach verifies your version of events, I'll talk to the assistant U.S. attorney about waiving charges." He broke down again.
"I'm so, so sorry. I hate myself for what we did."
"That's gonna go a long way with the U.S. attorney. Stay here for now. We'll be back." They left the room, and Sam took deep breaths of clean air. "God, it freaking reeks in there."
"Pee stinks," Freddy said.
"Yes, it does."
"For what it's worth, I believe him."
"I do too. Living with what he was part of will be punishment enough for him."
"I agree," Faith said when she joined them.
The blonde prosecutor, one of the 3 identical triplets that served as assistant U.S. attorneys, wore a tailored black suit and her trademark stilettos.
"He's the key to our case against Moore. We're going to want to put him under protection until the trial."
"We're probably going to have to protect his sister, too," Sam said.
"We can make that happen."
Malone joined them.
"They found Wallach in a shallow hole in the ground under the shed in Moore's yard. He's in rough shape. They're taking him to the ER and notifying the wife that he's been found."
"Holy shit," Sam said. "What a messed up case this is."
"What do we do about Moore?" Freddy asked.
"We do a drive-by, pun intended, to let him know his buddy rolled on him." Sam rubbed her hands together.
"Let's do it."
Their conversation, such as it was, with Moore, was largely one-sided.
"Your buddy Deacon rolled on you."
Moore stared at them with cold-blooded disdain.
"He's a pussy. You can't believe anything he says."
"The thing is," Sam said, "we do believe him. And we've found your ex-stepfather, too. I'm sure he's going to have plenty to say about how he ended up in a hole under your shed." Moore shrugged.
"Whatever. You ain't got dick on me."
Sam laughed. "Isn't that ironic, Detective Cruz? Seeing as how it was our friend Curtis's dick that gave us such a nice, juicy DNA sample. Too bad he had to go and rape Angel and leave us with all that DNA."
"It sure is ironic," Freddy agreed.
She had no doubt she'd hear from Freddy later about how gross she was. What did she care when Gross got the job done? For the first time, Moore's bravado slipped.
"That don't prove nothing."
"Oh, Curtis, you poor, stupid fool. DNA proves everything. We'll leave it at that. I don't know about you, Detective Cruz, but I'm ready for bed."
"I'm ready,"
Freddy said.
"It's been a long week."
They moved to the door.
Wait! Don't you want to hear my side of it?
Sam glanced at Freddy and then back at Moore.
Nah, we're good.
She loved the look of disbelief that crossed his face.